Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, NHK Japan, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Radio Havana Cuba. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Australia passed a bill making Facebook pay for the use of Australian news content. Facebook removed all links connected to the Myanmar military while the anti-coup protests continued to grow and become more violent. The United Nations held an environmental assembly calling for nations to make peace with nature. A massive oil spill has spread across 100 miles of the Mediterranean shoreline of Israel. The case has been put under a controversial gag order. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Australia's parliament has passed a landmark bill forcing digital platforms like Facebook to pay for use of Australian news content. Criticizing the bill, Facebook last week blocked news links in the country but then restored them. The government says Australian news media will now be fairly paid for their content.
Facebook has removed all accounts linked to Myanmar's military. The social media giant says the military is using the platform to incite violence against peaceful protests. The army has been imposing an increasingly violent crackdown on protesters. They have been once again demonstrating against the recent coup in major cities, including the commercial capital, Yangon.
Keeping up the pressure, protesters take back the center of Yangon. They believe it is they who have the momentum after Monday's general strike. They gather for a spirited sit-down protest near the Sula Pagoda, a rallying point in the country's past pro-democracy uprisings. Long live Aunt Aung San Suu Kyi, the protesters chant in reference to their detained leader, and we united against the junta. The Pagoda protest was one of several actions in Yangon on Thursday. Soldiers tried to stop students taking their protest off campus, but they didn't succeed in the end. Hundreds of pro-military protesters faced off with anti-coup activists. National League for Democracy supporters raising their arms in fury at the sight of their foes on the streets. Later, DW received this video circulating widely on Burmese social media. Activists claim it shows the pro-government side stabbing an opponent to deter pro-democracy supporters.
And the people who were committing the violence came out of the crowd who were supporting the military. And they were approaching people randomly. And it seems like they were approaching people who has vinyls and pictures of Daw Aung San Suu Kyi.
Human rights observers say 8 activists have been killed since the military coup on February 1st. But increasing violence hasn't stopped the pro-democracy movement, which has been growing week after week.
Make peace with nature. That is the call from the United Nations Environment Assembly tonight. Representatives from nearly 200 countries are meeting virtually to address urgent environmental issues. Most pressing are global warming, pollution, and protecting nature.
In Kayola, a district of Nairobi, environmental activist Samuel Omar and his youth group are planting trees for the climate instead of waiting for politicians to take action. The trees have all been donated and the work is voluntary.
If you can do big things, do big things. If you can do a small thing, but don't just do nothing. That is the worst thing you can do.
The United Nations would like to see more people plant trees and join in the fight against environmental pollution. The amount of garbage produced worldwide has doubled in the past 10 years, according to a new report by the UN Environment Programme. Biodiversity is also under threat. Around a million animal and plant species face extinction. And the ongoing climate crisis is having serious consequences. The UN Environmental Organization has called it a war against nature and strongly advises the world to make peace. The two-day meeting is taking place online rather than at the UN headquarters in Nairobi due to the coronavirus pandemic. One of the most important questions will be, what will happen to the many billions of euros from the global COVID-19 aid fund?
As governments, we are faced with a choice. We can't perpetuate our old economic and social structures with traditional economic recovery plans, or we can invest in a sustainable and inclusive future.
Germany had already committed an additional 68 million euros last year to support developing countries during the pandemic.
To Israel now, an ecological disaster there. A massive oil spill has hit most of Israel's Mediterranean shoreline, leaving black, sticky tar. It's also caused extensive damage to wildlife. DW correspondent Tanya Kramer reports that the cleanup could take months, even years.
It's a meticulous task. Clumps of tar line the sand on Israel's Mediterranean coast. Volunteers and soldiers are cleaning the beaches by hand. The oil spill has been described as one of the worst environmental disasters in decades. It has affected more than 170 kilometers of shoreline. Tons of crude oil reached the beaches of Israel from the south to the north, and crucial ecological systems have been affected. These are beaches where people bathe. They're nature reserves. Animals and plants living in the water have been affected, and some have died. The tar was detected after a heavy winter storm last week. The cause of the oil spill, most likely from a ship off the coast, is currently being investigated. But the case has been put under a controversial media gag order. Environmental activists have called the disaster a wake-up call for the government to put better environmental protections in place.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, NHK Japan. United Nations Secretary General Guterres has urged developed nations to make further efforts to help developing countries cope with climate change. A very strong earthquake off the coast of Japan has caused unusual changes in the Fukushima nuclear power plant, devastated 10 years ago and still containing huge amounts of radioactive materials. TEPCO, the managing company, would like to release more contaminated water into the Pacific Ocean and the atmosphere, and the International Atomic Energy Agency would like to be involved in these decisions. Iran will begin limiting International Atomic Energy Agency inspections unless the United States begins removing economic sanctions imposed by the Trump regime. NHK Japan.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has urged developed countries to make further efforts to help developing economies cope with climate change. Guterres made the remark Tuesday at an online meeting of the UN Security Council. He pointed out poor harvests due to climate change are causing social unrest and heightening the risks of violence and conflict.
Developed countries must keep their pledge of channeling $100 billion annually to the global south. They have already missed the deadline of 2020.
Climate change. Developed countries promised to make the annual payments by 2020 under the Paris Agreement on climate change. The figure has been increasing, and the payments totaled nearly $79 billion in 2018. But it fell short of the 2020 goal of $100 billion. Securing support for developing countries remains a challenge for the UN. It also seeks to convince world powers to cut their emissions of greenhouse gases.
Tokyo Electric Power Company has found that unusual changes at the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant may have been caused by a magnitude 7.3 earthquake that hit the region earlier this month. TEPCO discovered that pressure inside one of the reactor containment vessels had dropped. The utility said the earthquake on February 13th may have been to blame, but there's been no leakage of radioactive material. The nuclear plant has been undergoing decommissioning since the March 2011 disaster. TEPCO said it confirmed on Sunday that pressure inside the vessel of the number one reactor dropped to 0.9 kilopascals from the usual 1.2 kilopascals. Nitrogen is being added to the vessel to raise its pressure and reduce the risk of a hydrogen explosion. TEPCO also says a part damaged in the 2011 nuclear accident may have been exposed after the water level dropped, possibly causing an air leakage and the resulting drop in pressure. But TEPCO says there should be no issue with safety as it's continuing to pump water into the vessel. It added there have been no abnormalities in measurements at radioactivity monitoring posts in the compound.
The operator of the crippled nuclear plant in Fukushima says it failed to collect some seismic data earlier this month when the area was struck by a strong earthquake. Tokyo Electric Power Company says it knew two seismometers were broken but failed to repair them. TEPCO officials made the revelation during an online meeting on Monday with nuclear regulators. The company installed the seismometers at one of the four crippled reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi plant last March, but just months later, heavy rains damaged the system.
The seismometers had been out of order since last year. We were aware of that, but we failed to take measures to repair them.
The United Nations nuclear watchdog says it'll work with Japan to dispose of contaminated wastewater accumulating at the Fukushima Daiichi plant. An earthquake and tsunami almost exactly 10 years ago triggered a meltdown that crippled the facility. In an exclusive interview with NHK, Rafael Grossi reflected on what he called a thorough, painstaking exercise of analyzing ways to dispose of the water. It contains tritium and other radioactive substances. A Japanese government subcommittee recommended diluting the water to acceptable levels and then discharging it into the ocean or air. The government has yet to make a final decision. Grossi said, the sooner the better. The local fishing industry is worried about business taking a hit over rumors that releasing the wastewater into the ocean will contaminate seafood. Japan's neighbor South Korea has also conveyed serious concern. Grossi said this is where the IAEA can play an integral role.
Because knowing all these difficult circumstances, including the concern that may be expressed by the local population, by neighboring countries, it is important to have the presence of the IAEA. I am a firm believer that having the IAEA closely involved before, during, and after the possible release is going to result in a net gain for all, starting with Japan.
Iran has announced that it has started limiting international inspectors' access to its nuclear sites, citing the refusal of the United States to lift sanctions. Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said on Tuesday that the government halted the implementation of the additional protocol of the 2015 nuclear deal. The protocol allows the International Atomic Energy Agency to make unannounced inspections at nuclear facilities. The government warns that it will delete surveillance camera footage at nuclear sites without providing it to the IAEA if the U.S. does not lift sanctions within 3 months. The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden has shown a willingness to hold talks with Iran, but has urged Tehran to end its hardline policies and abide by the deal. Both the U.S. and Iran insist that the other side should act first.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 8:30 to 9 p.m. at 6155-7245 and 7445, or on the web at www3 www.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. On to Sputnik Radio. George Galloway spoke with Irish Independent MEP Claire Daly. She recently spoke out against a dangerously accelerating European Union's version of Russiaphobia, including economic sanctions as punishment for their arrest of Navalny. She pointed to the hypocrisy of the EU and human rights and expressed that it is the military-industrial complex that stimulates and benefits from escalating tensions. Sputnik Radio.
It was supposed to be a speech of 1 minute, can you imagine? Actually, she stretched it to 1:30. Claire Daly, independent Irish MEP, you were saying something that is just never heard on the European mainland these days.
And listening to the relentless Russiaphobia in this place, why are people surprised that Russia sees no point in engaging with the EU? I'm as happy as anybody else to stand up for anybody's rights, including Navalny's. But let's be honest about him. He's a vicious, anti-immigrant racist on maybe 4% of the support, in rallying hundreds and thousands in cities of millions, hardly a mass movement. And we wouldn't be discussing him at all if he'd been arrested anywhere else other than in Russia. Meanwhile, Julian Assange has been incarcerated for almost 10 years for exposing US war crimes. We can't mention his name. Tomorrow, Pablo Hasél, a Catalan rapper, is going to prison for his lyrics. Where's the call to sanction Spain? Tomorrow, 62-year-old Claire Grady is going to prison in West Virginia for her role in the non-violent plowshare action against Trident. Where's the demand to break off links with the US? Or the outcry about the hundreds of people arrested in this city on a protest a week ago? Nowhere, because this isn't about human rights. This is a geopolitical agenda against Russia, fueled by a military-industrial complex who need an enemy to justify their millions. Of course you're right to go to Russia. We should be engaged in dialogue, not war.
Tell us about it.
What I was trying to do was inject a little bit of balance into a discussion or an outrage being expressed by all of these MEPs from across the European Union about the visit of the High Representative Joseph Borrell to Moscow. And they were all outraged and how dare we, and why hadn't he brought back Navalny nearly, and why were we having any dealings with Russia? And what I simply tried to do was inject a little bit of balance from a couple of fronts. One, I think the growing Russiaphobia in the European Union is getting beyond what it has been, a little bit of a joke or hysteria, really. It's getting a bit out of hand at this stage. And really what I was trying to say is that the European Union's agenda is not about human rights or European values or all of this nonsense that we hear, that they've enough problems inside their own borders and boundaries to be lecturing other countries about their so-called human rights. And the only conclusion I can draw, given how much now Russia is being called out as the sort of big enemy, is that this is the arms lobby behind the scenes in the European Union trying to justify an enemy in order to rationalize and justify the amount of public money being spent on militarization. Navalny, who seems to be sort of being seized upon by whole sections of the European Union's establishment as some sort of a latter-day savior who's going to finally rid the world of Putin or something like this. And they seem to have just lost the plot completely around that. I mean, to me, there's no justification around it. I mean, the European Parliament, in one way, is not hugely representative. In another, you'll have seen Russia saying, look, right, we're not going to deal with the EU anymore. We're sick of this nonsense. We'll deal with the member states on our own. And they obviously do a lot of business with France and Germany and so on. And really, a bunch of other moaners given out from Eastern Europe or whatever does Russia really care? But I mean, it's very, very bad. I thought it was disgraceful, to be honest.
The German government, despite the efforts of the United States, Mike Pompeo's bullying and browbeating, has concluded the Nord Stream 2 pipeline deal with Russia. Russia is going to be supplying Germany with gas from now on when the pipeline is completed. It's a bit schizophrenic, isn't it, this attitude towards Russia?
It is, and it's indicative of the hypocrisy that's there, because there's no doubt about it. In terms of Europe and the European Union, Germany is where it's at. They're the main player, the key boy or girl in town, and they do business with Russia. And against pressure from the US, as you say, business is business. They want to do that deal, and that deal is in place. Again, France, the second biggest now that the UK has gone. France has always has a pretty good relationship with Russia as well in terms of business. So it is contradictory. On the one hand, we see a growing rhetoric which sort of belies the business contact, but rhetoric can become dangerous. And I mean, you know, we even have a special committee now on foreign interference, and much of that is shrouded in anti-Russia speak. And they admit in the reports that there's really little evidence of this foreign interference, but it's there. And it's been led by the Kremlin all of this time. And, you know, it serves a couple of issues. It helped to play into this narrative that Europe needs to spend scarce public resources on militarism to protect its borders and so on. And also it's a convenient excuse for European powers and governments who are letting down their own people to say, oh, well, it's not really our people who are rebelling or giving out. It's foreign interference from Russia that's making them do this. We see this in things like the Catalan independence struggle. It's supposed to be some Russian front being led by the Kremlin, even though the demands for Catalan independence have gone back generations. So it kind of suits them on a couple of fronts to have this narrative. But I thought it was getting seriously out of hand, really. In the dialogue in the parliament last week, there were very few voices of reason, and the outcome of it was, and the sort of frenzy that was being drummed up, resulted in Borrell, the high representative, coming out and saying, yes, we're going to have to look at ratcheting up sanctions against Russia, which is utterly ludicrous in this day and age. I think we will unfortunately see an escalation of the bad relations with Russia, which I think is just disgraceful. And actually, loads of other European citizens obviously agree with me, because I've had enormous feedback across the board on that.
Claire Daly, thank you, as always, for joining us.
That interview was by George Galloway from his program on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report, or could make a donation for production costs of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am grateful for a donation from a listener in Boulder, Colorado. Many thanks. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuela has condemned the EU for imposing a new round of sanctions against senior officials and lawmakers in a further attempt to create regime change. Then a viewpoint on the new Luis Arce administration in Bolivia that has returned an IMF loan taken out by the previous coup administration last year. They point out that for every dollar that exists, there are $4 out on loan. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Venezuela has condemned the European Union for imposing a new round of sanctions on more than a dozen senior officials, lawmakers, and members of the security forces in the South American state, saying the measure is based on, quote, false arguments about honorable citizens. Foreign Minister Jorge Arreaza said in a statement posted on Twitter that the sanctions are a sign that the EU is frustrated with the ineffectiveness of its earlier actions to force a change of government in Venezuela. He added, quote, such unwise decisions also reveal the inability of the European Union to respect the will of the Venezuelan nation and once again exposes its obsolete interventionist policy towards Venezuela. On Monday, the EU slapped sanctions on 19 Venezuelans over the legislative election last December, which the bloc alleged was rigged in favor of President Nicolas Maduro. Those sanctioned included Bernabe Gutierrez and José Brito, who were two lawmakers from the National Assembly and are recognized by Venezuela's government as leaders of two opposition parties. The EU sanctions also targeted Omar Prieto, governor of the state of Zulia, Remigio Cabellos Ichazo, the armed forces operational commander, and three officials of the Electoral Council, including its president, Indira Maria Alfonso Izaguirre.
It was recently announced that the government of Bolivia, headed by Luis Arce, which earned a loan of $327 million to the International Monetary Fund, IMF, that had been contracted by the coup administration last year and which fortunately was never used. This is actually a very rare event, and it certainly didn't come cheap, because $24 million had to be paid for commissions, interest, and other expenses, but in the long run, it was worth it, because it consolidates the economic sovereignty of the South American country. The credits granted by the IMF come along with a series of commitments, such as the periodic inspection of national accounts, the opening of markets to foreign interests, the reduction of social interest expenses, and the strengthening of the private sector. The Bolivian president's performance defies the dangerous trend in today's world, where governments, companies, and individuals are incurring staggering debts that exceed their capacity to pay. According to a report issued by the International Institute of Finance, the global debt is $281 trillion. This striking figure is equivalent to 355% of the world's gross domestic product, meaning that for every dollar produced, almost $4 are owed, which is not only rational but completely unaffordable. The situation is such that a good part of the funds contracted with private corporations or multilateral credit entities, such as the IMF or the World Bank, are not intended to generate social development or create infrastructure, but to meet maturing obligations. This is a vicious circle almost impossible to break. The COVID-19 pandemic made things worse. Credits became cheaper and everyone desperately sought a way to get money, so that in 2020 the world debt grew by $24 trillion. Now the problem is how to pay when important sectors of the economy are totally or partially stalled, such as construction, tourism, services or air transport, which are vital for international trade. Poor countries, of course, are much less likely to meet their commitments often contracted by governments without consulting their people, who hardly ever benefit in a tangible way from this irresponsible mortgaging of the present and the future, if indeed, under these conditions, we can speak of a future.
That report and viewpoint were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working pretty well at radiohc.cu, though the podcast links are not always updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, 6100, or 6165. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 24th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.